Accession number 32677, Reel 1.
Stan Hooper, Tape 1, Side 1. Where and when were you born?
Well, I was born in 1923, and I was born in Exeter. I am a Devonian, and I lived in the West Quarter district, that would be Preston Street, and I lived in a house called Ingrid and Billings, and my mother brought up 9 of us, so my mother found it very hard having 9 children in the house. But then I went to school, and it was Central School, and from Central School then I got the age of 14, and the age of 14 then we were out to work.
What did you like at school?
Sport. I was very, very fond of sport, cricket, football, swimming, running, jumping, and I think I proved myself in sport. So then after leaving, I mean, schools were different in those days.
My dad
fought in the 1914 war.
Yes.
I have a photograph of him in his uniform. And like everything else, when they come home, and they produced a family, which is only natural, I suppose, when you've been away so long. But my father never spoke of the war. Well, we never seemed to, I don't know, somehow, we never got really attached. My father was a very quiet man, and he worked at Willie's, at the meter shop in Exeter, which was the biggest factory there was in Exeter in those days. And he worked in the meter shop, and his job was a tinsmith. And he could make kettles, anything you think of, he could make with tin. But then, when I got to age 14, I went and followed my father in his profession as a tinsmith, and I worked at Willie's. And the boat that you see going across the river from the quay to the other side, that was put there really by Willie's, because that was the only way men could get to work from the quay side across to Willie's. Otherwise, you'd have to go all over the bridge and around Alphington. So that was one of the reasons why the bridge was put there. After a while, well, when I got to the age of 18, the war was on.
What did you think as growing up, as war loomed?
Well, to be honest, I mean, we didn't know how serious it was. I remember Dunkirk, and when they evacuated Dunkirk, I remember walking down the street and you have to hear the news. I thought to myself, well, you know, how serious is it? You know, I don't think anybody knew how serious it really was. And, I mean, we just went on from day to day. I mean, there was men being lost, not by the ones, not by the twos, by the hundreds. Men were being lost by the hundreds. And I remember when some of the troops came to Exeter, they went to High Street, they went up to High Street. There was French, there was Poles. And there was all nationalities which they brought off St. David's Station. I mean, St. David's Station, they used to bring them in, and then they used to bring them into Exeter. And I remember outside the old market, where there was loads and loads of foreign troops just walking around, which was evacuated from Dunkirk. Well, I suppose as time went on, I suppose life started to get a bit boring.
Did you do any home guard?
Yes, I belonged to the home guard, and I used to go out to a heavetry. That's where we trained, and I liked the home guard, and in one way, though I belonged to the home guard, I was able that when I joined the RAF, I knew how to do right turn, left turn, about turn, and I knew everything what you need to know to be in the services.
What did you do in the Home Guard?
Well, in Home Guard, we used to drill like everything else, you know, on parade, you know, turn left, turn right, about turn, pick up your rifle, slope arms, present arms. And when you come to look at it, you think it's all to do with discipline, nothing else, just discipline. And when you come to look back over the years, you say to yourself, well, what did that teach me, sloping arms? left turn, right turn, about turn, what the hours we spent on the parade ground, getting all dressed up and marching left, right, left, right. I mean, after all said and done, it was all due to discipline. And you think to yourself, well, where did that all lead to?
I suppose it's responding to orders when they're given without thinking about it.
That was it. And that was discipline. That was discipline. Well, then I decided to join the RAF. I didn't tell my mother. I didn't tell nobody.
Did you have any brothers?
Oh, yes.
And were they younger or older than you?
Some were older.
And had they already joined up?
Oh, no. Yes, one was in the army. Mm-hmm. He was a cook in the army. I had my brother Bert, who's passed away now. He was in the Royal Navy. And I had my other brother, which is still alive now, at Southampton. And he joined the parachute regiment. And he done his jumps, and he got his berry. And he came out of the services. He doesn't speak very much of it. But after coming out of services, he joined the Merchant Navy. And he used to go on the Queen Elizabeth, Queen Mary, and travel the world. He was a steward on these ships. But then that was one brother. Then my other brother, he was in the RAF. He was a flight sergeant, and he was on propellers, because there was no such thing as jets those days. All the aircraft was run by propellers. So he was in the RAF. I was in the RAF. My brother Bert, he was in the Royal Navy. My other brother Bob, he was in the Territorials. So it was a family affair.
A big worry for your mum.
Yes, and I'm afraid I was the only one stupid enough to get captured.
So you decided to join up without telling mum?
Oh, yes. So after a while, I think she had a bit of a shock. But
did you just turn up one day and say, I've joined up, mum?
Yep, that was just it, yes. So then I had to report. And I reported then.
And you were 18 at this time, were
18,
you?
Yes, sweet, yes, 18.
So that was 1941, yes. Then?
Yes, and never been kissed. Never been kissed. So then I went to Weston Street with Mayor. And where did we do our training? There was no other place to do training but on the seafront. And we marched up and down the seafront. You know, I always remember a couple of elderly people sitting on the seat watching us up and down, up and down, up and down. Until the corporal said to me one day, he said, Airman, he said, have you done this before? I said, oh yeah. He said, how did you come to do this? Oh, I said, I belong to the Home Guard. Home Guard, right, he said. I don't think I can teach you anything about marching or sloping arms or about turn. He said, what I'll do, he said, I'll pick out the men who doesn't know how to march and they don't know the left from the right. And he said, and see what you can make of them. So I used to have a little bunch of men every morning and teach them how to march. Because some, they didn't know the left from the right. And if you ever tried walking with your left arm out and your left foot out, I said, you know, you're getting a bit of a muck. But I said, I was very good to them, you know. But then...
Where were you living?
I was in what they call the Railway Hotel. The Railway Hotel. And that was our billets. And then,
did you have a good gang of chaps with you?
Yes. Oh, yes, yes. Welsh, Irish. Yes, they were quite nice. And we had to behave ourselves. We had to behave ourselves. Being very smart, well-dressed. On no account would you eat a pasty in uniform or lick an ice cream. No. You'd be on a charge. So after leaving Weston Supermare, then I went to a bomber base of Lincolnshire, Scampton. And I spent my time at Scampton doing guard duties around the bombers, Lancasters. And I remember them seeing lined up for a bombing raid on Germany, like taxis, all lined up, all behind each other, waiting to take off. And gradually, one by one, they went off, one by one. And the noise was terrific. But then they circled, and away they went. And then that left the airfield empty. And I remember going around and looking at the bombers, and they had all designs on the outside, cartoonists, where they, I don't know if you can remember seen Jane in the Daily Mirror.
Yes.
There was a cartoons of Jane. Well, some of them painted Janes on the outside. And all the raids that they'd done on Germany or Poland, wherever it was, they painted little bombers, little bombs on the outside. And I said, it was all lined up, how many trips they made. Some didn't make it, some did. And then, after Scampton.
How long were you at Scampton?
Oh, I should think about 10 months, something like that, not be sure.
Was it good food and accommodation there?
Yes, oh yes, we had open billets there where everybody had, all the beds was all laid out, you know, like a dormitory. And, you know, you see people undressing. You know, if you were a bit shy, I said, I don't know where you'd have gone through, I said, but same with showers, you know, some men have never been in a shower with other men, you know, to see them without their clothes on, you know, it must have been devastating to some of them. But gradually, I should think that they overcome that.
Did you have the opportunity to do any sport?
No sport at all. And I suppose there wasn't a lot of sport on then. It was all guard duties. And I remember once being on the parade ground, all lined up, ready for a parade. And for some reason or other, we were waiting, all spruced up. And all of a sudden, there was a biplane come over. And the engines were a little bit funny, you know, it wasn't ticking over proper. And everybody looked, and that was, this one's going to come down, you know, it's going to come down. And that's the only time I ever seen a parade ground disappear without an officer telling you to be dismissed. But I said, he was all right, so I said, that went all right.
And did you get any opportunity to go meet the civilian population locally?
No.
Dances or anything?
No. No, nothing like that.
No trips home?
Oh, no trips home. Never seen me mum.
What made you choose the RAF?
Well, I don't know, really. I suppose I knew I wasn't going to fly. That was a certainty. Because, I mean, you've got to go to university or something like that, you know. But I remember they used to call the RAF Blue Cream Boys. And so now I've always used Brill Cream. So I carried on the profession. And I said, I still use Brill Cream today. Yeah, so that was Scampton.
So when you were doing guard duty, would you have a 303 rifle?
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah, no ammunition. No ammunition. Just walking around. Looking at the bombers, you know, yeah. Counting how many flights they've been on, how many bombing raids they've been on, you know, looking at the cartoons outside and saying to yourself, you know, oh, I'd love to meet you.
Did you do any anti-gas training?
Oh, yes, we've done that all right. Yes, that made everybody gasp, I can tell you. Yes, but you had to do it. You had to go in and put the gas mask on and you were forced to go in and I'm afraid a lot of chaps came out spluttering, but some were different to others.
Did you do any specialist training?
No, not at Scampton, no, just ordinary foot drill.
Did you find the officers very relaxed being in the RAF?
Oh yeah, they were very, very strict. I was very, very strict. I think I knew, I managed to go abroad, because one day I went on duty. Just come off duty and I was going back to my billet. And I always remember a warrant officer was walking along and he said, Airman. And we turned around. He said, I want to speak to you. So I said, what are you doing here? What's in this football? Oh, he said, just come off duty. Come off duty? Is this where you're going to hang about? He said, no. He said, right, on your way. So we went on our way, and I think that was the reason why I got drafted abroad. I put it down to him.
Well, were you getting a bit bored there? Were you looking forward to going away?
No. I never went on leave at all.
Did you not have any leave between the end of that and going abroad?
Oh, yes, I got leave before I went abroad. And other than that, I didn't go. I didn't. Didn't do any training whatsoever.
Did you manage to get back home?
Yes, I managed to get back home and see Mother and the family. But it was just a week, and then you were back again, man. But I remember going out in David Station, and my brother then was home in the area, and I went up to see my girlfriend. And I'm afraid at our age, you know, we didn't know much about life. Things were very quiet, especially where girls were concerned, not like today. And I remember saying, well, I don't expect I shall see you now for a long time. And I said, I'll write you. And this was in her hallway. And then next minute I heard my brother banging the door. He said, come on, Lise, come on. He said, you're running late. He says, you've got to be on the train such and such a time. And I said to my girlfriend, cheerio, then. I'll see you again. And I never even kissed her goodbye. I never even kissed her goodbye. I said, I walked out the door and just turned around and waved me on. I says, and that was that. And I said, well, I didn't want my brother to see me kissing the girl, I suppose. So that was that. So then we went to Scampton, and then we went to Blackpool. And I'm afraid the tower then was all shut down owing to wartime. Mm-hmm. And we'd done our training in Blackpool. And from there,
What sort of training did you do?
Marching.
More marching.
More marching, you know. And what it was like when abroad.
Yes.
What it was like when abroad.
Did you have lots of injections and things?
Oh, yes. Some men didn't, found it a bit odd with their injections. You know, some men collapsed, and some men couldn't bear to see the needle go into them. But some men had to sit down, some men was groggy, but there we are. So,
what were you told to expect abroad? Were you going to look after an RAF base somewhere in the Middle East?
No, nobody knew where we were going to. Yeah. Nobody knew where we were going. And then we got all, but in the end we had an idea, because we got equipped with shorts and all the clothing that is due for a hard country, so we knew that we were in somewhere out the east. So then we boarded the boat at the Liverpool.
Do you remember which one it was?
And I think, yes, it was called the Strathard. The boat was called the Strathard. And I think it had a sister ship called the Strathaven. Well, we went aboard, and
how long did that take you? Did you have to go all the way around Africa?
All right round the Cape.
And did you go in convoy with other ships?
Yes.
With naval escort?
That's right, yeah, naval escort, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, and then...
How did you cope on the boat?
Well, the funny thing was that we all had hammocks. And if you ever seen anybody trying to get into a hammock, I can tell you, it's like trying to get yourself into a vest that's much too short for you, you know. Some boys used to get our way in and fall out, this kind of business, you know. But then one day I queued up outside for a meal, and I suppose I felt hungry. And then after that, an officer came along. He said, what are you doing here? Well, waiting for a meal. He said, right, you know, volunteers. He said, you can go in the kitchen. So he took us in the kitchen. He said, this is where your duties will be now. He said, in the kitchen helping. So we said, all right. So we had the best of food and everything. But the funny thing was that on our ship, there was only been rats. And when we used to open up the kitchen, well, I never opened it up, but when they opened up the kitchen door, there was iron bars. I always remember there was iron bars on this door. And the rats used to be in the kitchen there, and they used to have clubs, and the boys used to go around with clubs. Well, in the end, they smeared the walls with grease so to stop the rats from running up. But I always remember once when I was on board that ship, all the men were laid down. It was a lovely day, and the ship was steaming along, blue skies, and the sea was pretty calm. And there was all these men, all more or less with their backs propped up against the side of the corridor of the boat. And there was this rat. God knows where he come from. And he jumped over each one. As we went there, he jumped over each one. And you know, some men never knew it was a rat, some men was asleep, but it was rather surprising to think that a rat could go right down through, jumping over legs, you know. But, so I ended up in the kitchen.
So did you have good food on board?
Oh, I had the best in the kitchen.
Was it all tin stuff, was it?
Or yes. I remember once when we were running the Cape, we were getting the table laid, and all the stuff laid on the table, and we come into a violent storm, and all the things disappeared off the table. And the boat was really, really rocking, you know. And some of the men, you know, oh, there, you know.
How many men were on the boat?
I don't know, but it must have been a few thousand on there. It must have been.
And were you worried about the e-boats on the way, or?
Well, yes, I suppose we were, really.
Did you have to put your lights out at night? And
Oh, yes. You were very strict on board ship.
So when you got to Cape Town, it was probably like another world, wasn't it?
Oh, yes. Yes, we went to Cape Town, and I remember in the kitchen, I was doing the potatoes or something, and I chopped my finger, this one here, and my finger was hanging off. So then I had to go down and have my finger tied up and stitched back. And we did go into Cape Town. People were very nice. And I remember that I first noticed the cars in Cape Town. All the cars was all brand new, driving around. And they made you very, very welcome. And I thought to myself, well, to see all these lovely new cars, and back home in England, you see all these bangers running around, you know, so that attracted me.
Having the lights on everywhere must have been strange.
Yes. So we didn't stay there very long, couple of days. And then we went to Freetown. This is before we got the Cape Town. Freetown, I don't know if... when we went there, I think we loaded up with water and supplies. And I always remember the children used to come out in little boats. And you can imagine the size of a small boat being pushed along with a couple of oars with a couple of children, about 10-year-old, 9-year-old, 8-year-old. And they were shouting up, "Glasgow Tanner, you got Glasgow Tanner." And the men used to throw sixpence overboard. And as the sixpence went into the water, these little boys used to dive off the boat and go down and fetch it. And they bring it out and they bring it up. And then some of the boys there, you know what Englishmen are, don't you? You know what they are. They put silver paper around and ate me. And he threw the ate me over. Well, the time the little boy dived in the water and swam the way down through and picked it up. And then they weren't very happy when they come to the service. They said, no Glasgow Tanner, no Glasgow Tanner. But that was at Freetown. And then we went to, then we went up the Suez and got to Egypt then. And got off a boat and took it by lorry. And I always remember there was a fella, an elderly gentleman, and we were stood up at the back of the lorry, catching up ropes, and there was a gentleman who, some reason or other, was lying in the gutter. And there was, you couldn't see nothing but flies. He was covered in flies. And I think that was the first time I was beginning to see Egypt. So when we got to our destination, there was an AMES station, Air Ministry Experimental Station. And it was for tracking aircraft and messages. And we used to do guard duty on the station. But nobody was allowed near the station. Nobody. It was all barbed wire off. And we had tents those days. And it was barbed wire off. And we done nothing else then but patrol.
How did you cope with the heat and flies and stuff?
Flies was terrible, absolutely terrible flies. I mean, if you went to a dining hall, which was a tent, and you had the table, you went and got your food, and you come down, and the sweat was running off your arms onto the table, and there was hundreds of flies flying around. And you was like a zombie. You was flinging at your arms, this and that, you know. And I never understood that when you go to Egypt, you see these little children with a horde of flies, four or five flies stuck in their eyes. It always seems to go to the corner of their eyes. And, flies was nothing to them. They just accepted them. But with us, it was something new. But everything else...
Whereabouts were you? Did you have any idea?
I think we were near a village called, well, there was a little town called Ishmaelia, and I don't know how you would spell that in Egyptian language, but it was at Ishmaelia, and sometimes we used to go out and do patrols in the villages, and I always remember that when you walk through the village, the corporal or the sergeants would light up, so all those people who smoked were able to light a cigarette, because the stench was so terrible stench. And you could see in these villages where the meat was hanging outside, and just flies all around them, you know. But the children, they were very, very poor, the children. And I remember at the camp, we used to have a swill bin, and you'd put all your swill, after you've had your dinner, your sweet, whatever it was, and you'd put it in this bin. And there was everything in there. And I remember the Egyptians who worked on the camp used to go there and scoop it out. They used to scoop it out and take it back home for some to eat. But as I say, the Egyptians were very, very poor people.
Do you know what they were experimenting on in your station?
Well, I think it was just to do with tracking German aircraft.
Oh, yes.
German aircraft and...
So it was a radar?
Yes, a big radar mask. It was a big mask. And I was in charge of an ACAC brain gun. And I remember we had some Bakuana boys come from Bakuana land. And I was in charge of them in the gun post.
So were you a leading aircraftman by this time? Or?
Yes, I was a leading aircraftman, yes. 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 But like everything else, we marched. And on the drill, on the ground. And we then we used to go out into the villages and just walk around to let the Greek people and the Egyptian people know that we were there.
Mm.
So there was a Shafto cinema. It was an open-air cinema, not very far from the camp, but we used to go there and see films. And that was outside, and the seats was wooden, and the screen was wood. And it always broke down. It always broke down, and the boys weren't very happy. And they used to shout and howl, you know, because the film broke down. But it took them about half an hour to put it right again. But then we used to walk back to camp.
You coped with the heat all right?
Yes, I love the heat. I love the heat. Many times I was told off by the sergeant or the corporal to put my shirt on. They said I looked like a wog. Mm-hmm. And I think I could have gone into the village and lived as a wog, because I got so brown, so black. And I did love sun. And other than that...
Did you have much contact with the UK? Did you were able to send letters? Or?
No, you used to send letters. And I remember in the camp one evening, and the boys had the wireless on up there. And I went in, because you could buy a bottle of beer and that. And he said, he used to call me Darty those days in the camp. Hey, Darty, he says, where do you come from? Me? I said, I come from Devon. Yeah, but whereabouts in Devon? I said, Exeter. Exeter? Exeter? I said, yeah. Cool, he said, on the wires, he said, they not heavily bombed that place. Mm. I said, they haven't. Oh, yeah, he says. Yes. He said, they give Exeter a pounding. Good God, I said. So...
That must have been, what, 1942 then, was
yes.
it?
Yes.
Yes,
so that was...
So that was a real worry for you.
Oh, yeah, I went to the commanding officer, and I said to him, I said, on the wires, I said that my town, I said my city, I said Exeter, and Devon, has been heavily bombed. And I said, I haven't received anything. I said, no, it's early days, but I said, I'd like to know. I said, if my family's all right, if my mother and all that's all right.